Melanie, having found her voice, was becoming downright unbearable. How was I supposed to concentrate on my work with her opinions sounding off in my head all the time? In the seat behind Robert, a dark shadow moved. The seeker, clad in her usual black, leaned forward, intent for the first time on the subject of discussion. I resisted the urge to scowl at her. I didn't want Robert, already looking embarrassed, to mistake the expression as meant for him. Melanie grumbled. She wished I wouldn't resist. Having the seeker stalk our every footstep had been educational for Melanie. She used to think she couldn't hate anything or anyone more than she hated me. "Our time is almost up," I announced with relief. "I'm pleased to inform you that we will have a guest speaker next Tuesday who will be able to make up for my ignorance on this topic. Flame Tender, a recent addition to our planet, will be here to give us a more personal account of the settling of the Fire World. I know that you will give him all the courtesy you accord me and be respectful of the very young age of his host. Thank you for your time." The class filed out slowly, many of the students taking a minute to chat with one another as they gathered their things. What Kathy had said about friendships ran through my head, but I felt no desire to join any of them. They were strangers. Was that the way I felt? Or the way Melanie felt? It was hard to tell. Maybe I was naturally antisocial. My personal history supported that theory, I supposed. I'd never formed an attachment strong enough to keep me on any planet for more than one life. I noticed Robert and Faces Sunward lingering at the classroom door, locked in a discussion that seemed intense. I could guess the subject. "Fire World stories ruffle feathers," I started slightly. The seeker was standing at my elbow. The woman usually announced her approach with the quick tap of her hard shoes. I looked down now to see that she was wearing sneakers for once. Black, of course. She was even tinier without the extra inches. "It's not my favorite subject," I said in a bland voice. "I prefer to have first-hand experience to share." "Strong reactions from the class?" "Yes." She looked at me expectantly, as if waiting for more. I gathered my notes and turned to put them in my bag. "You seemed to react as well." I placed my papers in the bag carefully, not turning. "I wondered why you didn't answer the question." There was a pause. While she waited for me to respond, I didn't. "So, why didn't you answer the question?" I turned around, not concealing the impatience on my face. "Because it wasn't pertinent to the lesson, because Robert needs to learn some manners, and because it's no one else's business." I swung my bag to my shoulder and headed for the door. She stayed right beside me, rushing to keep up with my longer legs. We walked down the hallway in silence. It wasn't until we were outside, where the afternoon sun lit the dust motes in the salty air, that she spoke again. "Do you think you'll ever settle, Wanderer? On this planet, maybe? You seem to have an affinity for their feelings." I bridled at the implied insult in her tone. I wasn't even sure how she meant to insult me, but it was clear that she did. Melanie stirred resentfully. "I'm not sure what you mean."
"Tell me something, Wanderer. Do you pity them?"
"Who?" I asked blankly. "The walking flowers?"
"No, the humans."
I stopped walking and she skidded to a halt beside me. We were only a few blocks from my apartment, and I'd been hurrying in hopes of getting away from her, though likely as not she'd invite herself in. But her question caught me off guard.
"The humans?"
"Yes.
Do you pity them?"
"Don't you?"
"No. They were quite the brutal race. They were lucky to survive each other as long as they did."
"Not every one of them was bad."
"It was a predilection of their genetics. Brutality was part of their species. But you pity them, it seems.
It's a lot to lose, don't you think? I gestured around us. We stood in a park-like space between two ivy-covered dormitories. The deep green of the ivy was pleasing to the eye, especially in contrast to the faded red of the old bricks. The air was golden and soft, and the smell of the ocean gave a briny edge to the honey-sweet fragrance of the flowers in the bushes. The breeze caressed the bare skin of my arms.
In your other lives, you can't have felt anything so vivid. Wouldn't you pity anyone who had this taken from them?
Her expression stayed flat, unmoved. I made an attempt to draw her in, to make her consider another viewpoint.
Which other worlds have you lived on?
She hesitated, then squared her shoulders.
None. I've only lived on Earth.
That surprised me. She was as much a child as Robert.
Only one planet? And you chose to be a seeker in your first life?
She nodded once, her chin set.
Well, that's your business.
I started walking again. Maybe if I respected her privacy, she would return the favor.
I spoke to your comforter.
And maybe not, Melanie thought sourly.
What?
I gasped.
I gather you've been having more trouble than just accessing the information I need. Have you considered trying another more pliable host? She suggested that, did she not?
Kathy wouldn't tell you anything. The Seeker's face was smug.
She didn't have to answer. I'm very good at reading human expressions. I could tell when my questions struck a nerve.
How dare you? The relationship between a soul and her comforter is sacrosanct.
Yes, I know the theory, but the acceptable means of investigation don't seem to be working with your case. I have to get creative.
You think I'm keeping something from you? I demanded, too angry to control the disgust in my voice. You think I confided that to my comforter? My anger didn't faze her. Perhaps, given her strange personality, she was used to such reactions.
No, I think you're telling me what you know, but I don't think you're looking as hard as you could. I've seen it before. You're growing sympathetic to your host. You're letting her memories unconsciously direct your own desires. It's probably too late at this point. I think you'd be more comfortable moving on, and maybe someone else will have better luck with her.
Ha! I shouted. Melanie would eat them alive. Her expression froze in place. She'd had no idea, no matter what she thought she discerned from Kathy. She'd thought Melanie's influence was from memories, that it was unconscious.
I find it very interesting that you speak of her in the present tense.
I ignored that, trying to pretend I hadn't made a slip.
If you think someone else would have better luck breaking into her secrets, you're wrong. Only one way to find out.
Did you have someone in mind? I asked, my voice frigid with aversion. She grinned.
I've gotten permission to give it a try. Shouldn't take long. They're going to hold my host for me.
I had to breathe deeply. I was shaking, and Melanie was so full of hate that she was past words. The idea of having the Seeker inside me, even though I knew that I would not be here, was so repugnant that I felt a return of last week's nausea.
It's too bad for your investigation that I'm not a skipper.
The Seeker's eyes narrowed.
Well, it does certainly make this assignment drag on. History was never of much interest to me, but it looks like I'm in for a full course now.
You just said that it was probably too late to get any more from her memories, I reminded her, struggling to make my voice calm.
Why don't you go back to wherever you belong?
She shrugged and smiled a tight smile.
I'm sure it is too late for voluntary information. But if you don't cooperate, she might just lead me to them yet.
Lead you?
When she takes full control and you're no better than that weakling, once racing song, now Kevin. Remember him? The one who attacked the healer?
I stared at her, eyes wide, nostrils flared.
Yes, it's probably just a matter of time. Your comforter didn't tell you the statistics, did she? Well, even if she did, she wouldn't have the latest information that we have access to. The long-term success rate for situations such as yours, once a human host begins to resist, is under 20%. Did you have any idea it was so bad? They're changing the information they give potential settlers. There will be no more adult hosts offered. The risks are too great. We're losing souls. It won't be long before she's talking to you, talking through you, controlling your decisions.
I hadn't moved an inch or relaxed a muscle. The seeker leaned in, stretched up on her toes to put her face closer to mine. Her voice turned low and smooth in an attempt to sound persuasive.
Is that what you want, wanderer? To lose? To fade away? Erased by another awareness? To be no better than a host body?
I couldn't breathe.
It only gets worse. You won't be you anymore. She'll beat you and you'll disappear. Maybe someone will intervene. Maybe they'll move you like they did Kevin. And you'll become some child named Melanie who likes to tinker with cars rather than compose music. Or whatever it is she does.
The success rate is under 20%, I whispered.
She nodded, trying to suppress a smile. You're losing yourself, Wanderer. All the worlds you've seen, all the experiences you've collected, they'll be for nothing. I saw in your file that you have the potential for motherhood. If you gave yourself to be a mother, at least all that would not be entirely wasted. Why throw yourself away? Have you considered motherhood?
I jerked away from her, my face flushing.
I'm sorry, she muttered, her face darkening too. That was impolite. Forget I said that.
I'm going home. Don't follow.
I have to, Wanderer. It's my job.
Why do you care so much about a few spare humans? Why? How do you justify your job anymore? We've won. It's time for you to join society and do something productive.
My questions, my implied accusations, did not ruffle her. Wherever the fringes of their world touch ours, there is death.
She spoke the words peacefully, and for a moment I glimpsed a different person in her face. It surprised me to realize that she deeply believed in what she did. Part of me had supposed that she only chose to seek because she illicitly craved the violence.
If even one soul is lost to your Jared or your Jamie, that is one soul too many. Until there is total peace on this planet, my job will be justified. As long as there are Jareds surviving, I am needed to protect our kind. As long as there are Melanies leading souls around by the nose...
I turned my back on her and headed for my apartment with long strides that would force her to run if she wanted to keep up.
Don't lose yourself, Wanderer, she called after me. Time is running out for you.
She paused, then shouted more loudly.
Inform me when I'm to start calling you Melanie!
Her voice faded as the space between us grew. I knew she would follow at her own pace. This last uncomfortable week, seeing her face in the back of every class, hearing her footsteps behind me on the sidewalk every day, was nothing compared to what was coming. She was going to make my life a misery. It felt as if Melanie were bouncing violently against the inner walls of my skull.
Let's get her canned! Tell her higher-ups that she did something unacceptable. Assaulted us. It's our word against hers.
In a human world, I reminded her, almost sad that I didn't have access to that sort of recourse. There are no higher-ups in that sense. Everyone works together as equals. There are those whom many report to in order to keep the information organized, and councils who make decisions about that information, but they won't remove her from an assignment she wants. You see, it works like,
who cares how it works if it doesn't help us? I know,
Let's kill her!
A gratuitous image of my hands tightening around the seeker's neck filled my head. That sort of thing is exactly why my kind is better left in charge of this place. Get off your high horse. You'd enjoy it as much as I would. The image returned, the seeker's face turning blue in our imagination, but this time it was accompanied by a fierce wave of pleasure. That's you, not me. My statement was true. The image sickened me. But it was also perilously close to false, in that I would very much enjoy never seeing the seeker again.
What do we do now?
I'm not giving up. You're not giving up. And that wretched seeker is sure as hell not giving up. I didn't answer her. I didn't have a ready answer. It was quiet in my head for a brief moment. That was nice. I wished the silence could last. But there was only one way to buy my peace. Was I willing to pay the price? Did I have a choice anymore? Melanie slowly calmed. By the time I was through the front door, locking behind me the bolts that I'd never before turned, human artifacts that had no place in a peaceful world, her thoughts were contemplative. I'd never thought about how you all carry on your species. I didn't know it was like that. We take it very seriously, as you can imagine. Thanks for your concern. She wasn't bothered by the thick edge of irony in the thought. She was still musing over this discovery while I turned on my computer and began to look for shuttle flights. It was a moment before she was aware of what I was doing.
Where are we going?
The thought held a flicker of panic. I felt her awareness begin to rifle through my head, her touch like the soft brush of feathers, searching for anything I might be keeping from her. I decided to save her the search.
I'm going to Chicago.
The panic was more than a flicker now.
Why?
I'm going to see the healer. I don't trust her. I want to talk to him before I make my decision. There was a brief silence before she spoke again.
The decision to kill me?
Yes. That one. Chapter 8. Loved.
You're afraid to fly?
The seeker's voice was full of disbelief, edging toward mockery.
You've traveled through deep space 8 times, and you're afraid to take a shuttle to Tucson, Arizona?
First of all, I'm not afraid. Second, when I traveled through deep space, I wasn't exactly aware of where I was, what with being stored in a hibernation chamber. And third, this host gets motion sickness on shuttles. The seeker rolled her eyes in disgust.
So take medication. What would you have done if Healer Fords hadn't relocated to St. Mary's? Would you be driving to Chicago?
No. But since the option of driving is now reasonable, I will take it. It will be nice to see a bit more of this world. The desert can be stunning.
The desert is dead boring,
and I'm not in any hurry. I have many things to think through, and I will appreciate some time alone. I looked pointedly at her as I emphasized the last word.
I don't understand the point of visiting your old healer anyway. There are many competent healers here.
I'm comfortable with Healer Fords. He has experience with this, and I don't trust that I have all the information I need. I gave her another significant look.
You don't have time to not hurry, Wanderer. I recognize the signs.
Forgive me if I don't consider your information impartial. I know enough of human behavior to recognize the signs of manipulation. She glowered at me. I was packing my rental car with the few things I planned to take with me. I had enough clothes to go a week between washing and the basic hygiene necessities. Though I wasn't bringing much, I was leaving even less behind. I'd accumulated very little in the way of personal belongings. After all these months in my small apartment, the walls were still bare, the shelves empty. Perhaps I'd never meant to settle here.
The seeker was planted on the sidewalk next to my open trunk, assailing me with snide questions and comments whenever I was in hearing distance. At least I was secure in the belief that she was far too impatient to follow me on the road. She would take a shuttle to Tucson, just as she was hoping to shame me into doing. It was a huge relief. I imagined her joining me every time I stopped to eat, hovering outside gas station bathrooms, her inexhaustible inquisitions waiting for me whenever my vehicle paused at a light. I shuddered at the thought. If a new body meant freeing myself of the seeker, well, that was quite an inducement. I had another choice, too. I could abandon this entire world as a failure and move on to a tenth planet. I could work to forget this whole experience. Earth could be just a short blip in my otherwise spotless record. But where would I go? A planet I'd already experienced? The singing world had been one of my favorites, but to give up sight for blindness? The planet of the flowers was lovely, yet chlorophyll-based life forms had so little range of emotion. It would feel unbearably slow after the tempo of this human place. A new planet? There was a recent acquisition. Here on Earth, they were calling the new hosts dolphins, for lack of a better comparison, though they resembled dragonflies more than marine mammals. A highly developed species, and certainly mobile. But after my long stay with the sea weeds, the thought of another water planet was repugnant to me. No. There was still so much to this planet that I hadn't experienced. Nowhere else in the known universe called to me as strongly as this shady little green yard on this quiet street, or held the lure of the empty desert sky, which I'd seen only in Melanie's memories. Melanie did not share her opinion on my options. She had been very quiet since my decision to find Ford's Deep Waters, my first healer. I wasn't sure what the detachment meant. Was she trying to seem less dangerous? Less of a burden? Was she preparing herself for the invasion of the Seeker? For death? Or was she preparing to fight me? To try to take over? Whatever her plan, she kept herself distant. She was just a faint, watchful presence in the back of my head. I made my last trip inside, searching for anything forgotten. The apartment looked empty. There were only the basic furnishings that had been left by the last tenant. The same plates were still in the cupboards, the pillows on the bed, the lamps on the tables. If I didn't come back, there would be little for the next tenant to clear out. The phone rang as I was stepping out the door, and I turned back to get it, but I was too late. I'd already set the message system to answer on the first ring. I knew what the caller would hear. My vague explanation that I would be out the rest of the semester, and that my classes would be cancelled until a replacement could be found. No reason given. I looked at the clock on top of the television. It was barely past 8 in the morning. I was sure it must be Kurt on the phone, having just received the only slightly more detailed email I'd sent him late last night. I felt guilty about not finishing out my commitment to him, almost like I was already skipping. Perhaps this step, this quitting, was the prelude to my next decision, my greater shame. The thought was uncomfortable. It made me unwilling to listen to whatever the message said, though I wasn't in any real hurry to leave. I looked around the empty apartment one more time. There was no sense of leaving anything behind me, no fondness for these rooms. I had the strange feeling that this world, not just Melanie, but the entire orb of the planet, did not want me, no matter how much I wanted it. I just couldn't seem to get my roots in. I smiled wryly at the thought of roots. This feeling was just superstitious nonsense. I'd never had a host that was capable of superstition. It was an interesting sensation, like knowing you were being watched without being able to find the watcher. It raised goosebumps on the nape of my neck. I shut the door firmly behind me, but did not touch the obsolete locks. No one would disturb this place until I returned or it was given to someone new. Without looking at the seeker, I climbed into the car. I hadn't done much driving, and neither had Melanie, so this made me a bit nervous. But I was sure I would get used to it soon enough.
"I'll be waiting for you in Tucson," the Seeker said, leaning in the open passenger side window as I started the engine.
"I have no doubt of that," I muttered. I found the controls on the door panel. Trying to hide a smile, I hit the button to raise the glass and watched her jump back.
"Maybe," she said, raising her voice to almost a shout, so that I could hear her over the engine noise and through the closed window. "Maybe I'll try it your way. Maybe I'll see you on the road."
She smiled and shrugged. She was just saying it to upset me. I tried not to let her see that she had. I focused my eyes on the road ahead and pulled carefully away from the curb. It was easy enough to find the freeway and then follow the signs out of San Diego. Soon there were no signs to follow, no wrong turns to take. In 8 hours I would be in Tucson. It wasn't long enough. Perhaps I would stay a night in some small town along the way. If I could be sure that the Seeker would be ahead, waiting impatiently rather than following behind, a stop would be a nice delay. I found myself looking in the rearview mirror often, searching for a sign of pursuit. I was driving slower than anyone else, unwilling to reach my destination, and the other cars passed me without pause. There were no faces I recognized as they moved ahead. I shouldn't have let the Seeker's taunt bother me. She clearly didn't have the temperament to go anywhere slowly. Still, I continued to watch for her. I'd been west to the ocean, north and south, up and down the pretty California coastline, but I'd never been east for any distance at all. Civilization fell behind me quickly, and I was soon surrounded by the blank hills and rocks that were the precursors to the empty desert wastelands. It was very relaxing to be away from civilization, and this bothered me. I should not have found the loneliness so welcoming. Souls were sociable. We lived and worked and grew together in harmony. We were all the same, peaceful, friendly, honest. Why should I feel better away from my kind? Was it Melanie who made me this way? I searched for her, but found her remote, dreaming in the back of my head. This was the best it had been since she'd started talking again. The miles passed quickly. The dark, rough rocks and the dusty plains covered in scrub flew by with monotonous uniformity. I realized I was driving faster than I'd meant to. There wasn't anything to keep my mind occupied here, so I found it hard to linger. Absently, I wondered why the desert was so much more colorful in Melanie's memories, so much more compelling. I let my mind coast with hers, trying to see what it was that was special about this vacant place. But she wasn't seeing the sparse dead land surrounding us. She was dreaming of another desert, canyoned and red, a magical place. She didn't try to keep me out. In fact, she seemed almost unaware of my presence. I questioned again what her detachment meant. I sensed no thought of attack. It felt more like a preparation for the end. She was living in a happier place in her memory, as if she were saying goodbye. It was a place she had never allowed me to see before. There was a cabin, an ingenious dwelling tucked into a nook in the red sandstone, perilously close to the flash floodline. An unlikely place, far from any trail or path, built in what seemed a senseless location. A rough place, without any of the conveniences of modern technology. She remembered laughing at the sink one had to pump to pull water up from the ground.
"It beats pipes," Jared says,
the crease between his eyes deepening as his brows pull together. He seems worried by my laugh. Is he afraid I don't like it?
"Nothing to trace. No evidence that we're here."
"I love it," I say quickly. "It's like an old movie. It's perfect." The smile that never truly leaves his face, he smiles even in his sleep, grows wide.
"They don't tell you the worst parts in the movies. Come on. I'll show you where the latrine is.
I hear Jamie's laughter echo through the narrow canyon as he runs ahead of us. His black hair bounces with his body. He bounces all the time now, this thin boy with the sun-darkened skin. I hadn't realized how much weight those narrow shoulders were carrying. With Jared, he is positively buoyant. The anxious expression has faded, replaced by grins. We are both more resilient than I gave us credit for. Who built this place?
My father and older brothers. I helped, or rather hindered, a little. My dad loved to get away from everything, and he didn't care much about convention. He never bothered to find out who the land actually belonged to, or file permits, or any of that pesky stuff.
Jared laughs, throwing his head back. The sun dances off the blonde bits in his hair.
Officially, this place doesn't exist. Convenient, isn't it?
Without seeming to think about it, he reaches out and takes my hand. My skin burns where it meets his. It feels better than good, but it sets off a strange aching in my chest. He is forever touching me this way, always seeming to need to reassure himself that I am here. Does he realize what it does to me, the simple pressure of his warm palm next to mine? Does his pulse jump in his veins, too? Or is he just happy to not be alone anymore? He swings our arms as we walk beneath a little stand of cottonwood trees, their green so vivid against the red that it plays tricks on my eyes, confusing my focus. He is happy here, happier than in other places. I feel happy, too. The feeling is still unfamiliar. He hasn't kissed me since that first night when I screamed, finding the scar on his neck. Does he not want to kiss me again? Should I kiss him? What if he doesn't like that? He looks down at me and smiles, the lines around his eyes crinkling into little webs. I wonder if he is as handsome as I think he is, or if it's just that he's the only person left in the whole world besides Jamie and me. No, I don't think that's it. He really is beautiful.
What are you thinking, Mel? He asks. You seem to be concentrating on something very important.
He laughs. I shrug, and my stomach flutters. It's beautiful here. He looks around us.
Yes. But then isn't home always beautiful?
Home. I repeat the word quietly. Home.
You're home, too, if you want it.
I want it. It seems like every mile I've walked in the past 3 years has been toward this place. I never want to leave, though I know we'll have to. Food doesn't grow on trees, not in the desert, at least. He squeezes my hand, and my heart punches against my ribs. It's just like pain, this pleasure. There was a blurring sensation as Melanie skipped ahead, her thoughts dancing through the hot day until hours after the sun had fallen behind the red canyon walls. I went along, almost hypnotized by the endless road stretching ahead of me, the skeletal bushes flying by with mind-numbing sameness. I peek into the one narrow little bedroom. The full-size mattress is only inches away from the rough stone walls on either side. It gives me a deep, rich sense of joy to see Jamie asleep on a real bed, his head on a soft pillow. His lanky arms and legs sprawl out, leaving little room for me where I am meant to sleep. He is so much bigger in reality than the way I see him in my head. Almost 11. Soon he won't be a child at all, except that he will always be a child to me. Jamie breathes evenly, sleeping sound. There is no fear in his dream, for this moment at least. I shut the door quietly and go back to the small couch where Jared waits. Thank you, I whisper, though I know shouting the words wouldn't wake Jamie now. I feel bad. This couch is much too short for you. Maybe you should take the bed with Jamie.
Jared chuckles. Mel, you're only a few inches shorter than I am. Sleep comfortably for once. Next time I'm out, I'll steal myself a cot or something.
I don't like this, for lots of reasons. Will he be leaving soon? Will he take us with him when he goes? Does he see this room assignment as a permanent thing?
He drops his arm around my shoulders and tucks me against his side. I scoot closer, though the heat of touching him has my heart aching again.
Why the frown? He asks.
When will we have to leave again?
He shrugs.
We scavenged enough on our way up that we're set for a few months. I can do a few short raids if you want to stay in one place for a while. I'm sure you're tired of running.
Yes, I am, I agree. I take a deep breath to make me brave.
But if you go, I go.
He hugs me tighter.
I'll admit I prefer it that way. The thought of being separated from you?
He laughs quietly.
Does it sound crazy to say that I'd rather die? Too melodramatic?
No. I know what you mean.
He must feel the same way I do. Would he say these things if he thought of me as just another human, and not as a woman?
I realize that this is the first time we've ever been really alone since the night we met. The first time there's been a door to close between a sleeping Jamie and the two of us. So many nights we've stayed awake, talking in whispers, telling all of our stories, the happy stories and the horror stories, always with Jamie's head cradled on my lap. It makes my breath come faster, that simple closed door.
I don't think you need to find a cot.
Not yet.
I feel his eyes on me, questioning, but I can't meet them. I'm embarrassed now, too late. The words are out.
We'll stay here until the food is gone, don't worry. I've slept on worse things than this couch.
That's not what I mean, I say, still looking down.
You get the bed, Mel. I'm not budging on that.
That's not what I mean either.
It's barely a whisper.
I meant the couch is plenty big for Jamie. He won't outgrow it for a long time. I could share the bed with you. There is a pause. I want to look up, to read the expression on his face, but I'm too mortified. What if he is disgusted? How will I stand it? Will he make me go away? His warm, calloused fingers tug my chin up. My heart throbs when our eyes meet.
Mel,
His face for once has no smile. I try to look away, but he holds my chin so that my gaze can't escape his. Does he not feel the fire between his body and mine? Is that all me? How can it all be me? It feels like a flat sun trapped between us, pressed like a flower between the pages of a thick book burning the paper. Does it feel like something else to him? Something bad? After a moment, his head turns. He's the one looking away now, still keeping his grip on my chin. His voice is quiet.
You don't owe me that, Melanie. You don't owe me anything at all.
It's hard for me to swallow. I'm not saying... I didn't mean that I felt obligated, and... You shouldn't either. Forget I said anything.
Not likely, Mel.
He sighs, and I want to disappear. Give up. Lose my mind to the invaders if that's what it takes to erase this huge blunder. Trade the future to blot out the last 2 minutes of the past. Anything.
Jared takes a deep breath. He squints at the floor, his eyes and jaw tight.
Mel, it doesn't have to be like that. Just because we're together, just because we're the last man and woman on Earth.
He struggles for words, something I don't think I've ever seen him do before.
That doesn't mean you have to do anything you don't want to. I'm not the kind of man who would expect... You don't have to...
He looks so upset, still frowning away, that I find myself speaking, though I know it's a mistake before I start. That's not what I mean, I mutter.
have to is not what I'm talking about, and I don't think you're that kind of man. No, of course not. It's just that I love him.
I grit my teeth together before I can humiliate myself more. I should bite my tongue off right now before it ruins anything else.
Just that, he asks.
I try to shake my head, but he's still holding my chin tight between his fingers.
Mel?
I yank free and shake my head fiercely. He leans closer to me, and his face is different suddenly. There's a new conflict I don't recognize in his expression, and even though I don't understand it completely, it erases the feeling of rejection that's making my eyes sting.
Will you talk to me? Tell me what you're thinking.
Please, he murmurs. I can feel his breath on my cheek, and it's a few seconds before I can think at all. His eyes make me forget that I am mortified, that I wanted to never speak again. If I got to pick anyone at all to be stranded on a deserted planet with, it would be you, I whisper. The sun between us burns hotter. I always want to be with you, and not just to talk to. When you touch me, I dare to let my fingers brush lightly along the warm skin of his arm, and it feels like the flames are flowing from their tips now. His arm tightens around me. Does he feel the fire? I don't want you to stop. I want to be more exact, but I can't find the words. That's fine. It's bad enough having admitted this much. If you don't feel the same way, I understand. Maybe it isn't the same for you. That's okay. Lies.
Oh, Mel.
He sighs in my ear and pulls my face around to meet his. More flames in his lips, fiercer than the others, blistering. I don't know what I'm doing, but it doesn't seem to matter. His hands are in my hair, and my heart is about to combust. I can't breathe. I don't want to breathe. But his lips move to my ear, and he holds my face when I try to find them again.
It was a miracle. More than a miracle when I found you, Melanie. Right now, if I was given the choice between having the world back and having you, I wouldn't be able to give you up. Not to save 5 billion lives.
That's wrong.
Very wrong. But very true.
Jared,
I breathe.
I try to reach for his lips again. He pulls away, looking like he has something to say. What more can there be?
But.
But? How can there be a but? What could possibly follow all this fire that starts with a but?
But you're 17, Melanie. And I'm 26.
What's that got to do with anything? He doesn't answer. His hands stroke my arms slowly, painting them with fire. You've got to be kidding me.
I lean back to search his face.
You're going to worry about conventions when we're past the end of the world?
He swallows loudly before he speaks. Most conventions exist for a reason, Mel. I would feel like a bad person, like I was taking advantage. You're very young.
No one's young anymore. Anyone who's survived this long is ancient.
There's a smile pulling up one corner of his mouth. Maybe you're right. But this isn't something we need to rush.
What is there to wait for?
I demand.
He hesitates for a long moment, thinking.
Well, for one thing, there are some practical matters to consider.
I wonder if he is just searching for a distraction, trying to stall. That's what it feels like.
I raise one eyebrow.
I can't believe the turn this conversation has taken. If he really does want me, this is senseless.
See, he explains, hesitating.
Under the deep golden tan of his skin, it looks like he might be blushing.
When I was stalking this place, I wasn't much planning for guests. What I mean is,
the rest comes out in a rush.
Birth control was pretty much the last thing on my mind.
I feel my forehead crease. Oh. The smile is gone from his face, and for one short second there is a flash of anger I've never seen there before. It makes him look dangerous in a way I hadn't imagined he could.
This isn't the kind of world I'd want to bring a child into.
The words sink in, and I cringe at the thought of a tiny, innocent baby opening his eyes to this place. It's bad enough to watch Jamie's eyes, to know what this life will bring him, even in the best possible circumstances. Jared is suddenly Jared again. The skin around his eyes crinkles.
Besides, we've got plenty of time to think about this.
Stalling again, I suspect.
Do you realize how very, very little time we've been together so far? It's been just 4 weeks since we found each other.
This floors me. That can't be.
29 days. I'm counting.
I think back. It's not possible that it has been only 29 days since Jared changed our lives. It seems like Jamie and I have been with Jared every bit as long as we were alone. 2 or 3 years, maybe.
We've got time, Jared says again.
An abrupt panic, like a warning premonition, makes it impossible for me to speak for a long moment. He watches the change on my face with worried eyes. You don't know that. The despair that softened when he found me strikes like the lash of a whip. You can't know how much time we'll have. You don't know if we should be counting in months or days or hours. He laughs a warm laugh, touching his lips to the tense place where my eyebrows pull together.
Don't worry, Mel. Miracles don't work that way. I'll never lose you. I'll never let you get away from me.
She brought me back to the present, to the thin ribbon of the highway winding through the Arizona wasteland, baking under the fierce noon sun, without my choosing to return. I stared at the empty place ahead, and felt the empty place inside. Her thought sighed faintly in my head. You never know how much time you'll have. The tears I was crying belonged to both of us. Chapter 9. Discovered. I drove quickly through the I-10 junction as the sun fell behind me. I didn't see much besides the white and yellow lines on the pavement and the occasional big green sign pointing me farther east. I was in a hurry now. I wasn't sure exactly what I was in a hurry for, though. To be out of this, I supposed. Out of pain, out of sadness, out of aching for lost and hopeless loves. Did that mean out of this body? I couldn't think of any other answer. I would still ask my questions of the healer, but it felt as though the decision was made. Skipper. Quitter. I tested the words in my head, trying to come to terms with them. If I could find a way, I would keep Melanie out of the Seeker's hands. It would be very hard. No, it would be impossible. I would try. I promised her this, but she wasn't listening. She was still dreaming. Giving up, I thought, now that it was too late for giving up to help. I tried to stay clear of the red canyon in her head, but I was there too. No matter how hard I tried to see the cars zooming beside me, the shuttles gliding in toward the port, the few fine clouds drifting overhead, I couldn't pull completely free of her dreams. I memorized Jared's face from 1,000 different angles. I watched Jamie shoot up in a sudden growth spurt, always skin and bones. My arms ached for them both. No, the feeling was sharper than an ache, blade-edged and violent. It was intolerable. I had to get out. I drove along the narrow 2-lane freeway. The desert was, if anything, more monotonous and dead than before, flatter, more colorless. I would make it to Tucson long before dinner time. Dinner. I hadn't eaten yet today, and my stomach rumbled as I realized that. The Seeker would be waiting for me there. My stomach rolled then, hunger momentarily replaced with nausea, Automatically, my foot eased off the gas. I checked the map on the passenger seat. Soon I would reach a little pit stop at a place called Picacho Peak. Maybe I would stop to eat something there, put off seeing the Seeker a few precious moments. As I thought of this unfamiliar name, Picacho Peak, there was a strange, stifled reaction from Melanie. I couldn't make it out. Had she been here before? I searched for a memory, a sight or a smell that corresponded, but found nothing. Picacho Peak. Again, there was that spike of interest that Melanie repressed. What did the words mean to her? She retreated into faraway memories, avoiding me. This made me curious. I drove a little faster, wondering if the sight of the place would trigger something. A solitary mountain peak, not massive by normal standards, but towering above the low, rough hills closer to me, was beginning to take shape on the horizon. It had an unusual, distinctive shape. Melanie watched it grow as we traveled, pretending indifference to it. Why did she pretend not to care when she so obviously did? I was disturbed by her strength when I tried to find out. I couldn't see any way around the old blank wall. It felt thicker than usual, though I'd thought it was almost gone. I tried to ignore her, not wanting to think about that, that she was growing stronger. I watched the peak instead, tracing its shape against the pale, hot sky. There was something familiar about it, something I was sure I recognized, even as I was positive that neither of us had been here before. Almost as if she was trying to distract me, Melanie plunged into a vivid memory of Jared, catching me by surprise. A shiver in my jacket, straining my eyes to see the muted glare of the sun dying behind the thick, bristly trees. I tell myself that it is not as cold as I think it is. My body just isn't used to this. The hands that are suddenly there on my shoulder do not startle me, though I am afraid of this unfamiliar place and I did not hear his silent approach. Their weight is too familiar.
You're easy to sneak up on.
Even now there is a smile in his voice. I saw you coming before you took the first step, I say without turning. I have eyes in the back of my head. Warm fingers stroke my face from my temple to my chin, dragging fire along my skin.
You look like a dryad, hidden here in the trees, he whispers in my ear. One of them, so beautiful that you must be fictional.
We should plant more trees around the cabin. He chuckles, and the sound makes my eyes close and my lips stretch into a grin.
Not necessary, he says. You always look that way.
Says the last man on earth to the last woman on earth on the eve of their separation. My smile fades as I speak. Smiles cannot last today. He sighs. His breath on my cheek is cool compared to the burning desert air.
Jamie might resent that implication.
Jamie's still a boy. Please, please keep him safe.
I'll make you a deal, Jared offers. You keep yourself safe, and I'll do my best. Otherwise, no deal.
Just a joke, but I can't take it lightly. Once we are apart, there are no guarantees. No matter what happens, I insist.
Nothing's going to happen. Don't worry.
The words are nearly meaningless, a waste of effort. But his voice is worth hearing, no matter the message. Okay. He pulls me around to face him and I lean my head against his chest. I don't know what to compare his scent to. It is his own, as unique as the smell of juniper or the desert rain.
You and I won't lose each other, he promises. I will always find you again.
Being Jared, he cannot be completely serious for more than a heartbeat or two.
No matter how well you hide, I'm unstoppable at hide-and-seek.
Will you give me to the count of 10?
Without peeking.
You're on,
I mumble, trying to disguise the fact that my throat is thick with tears.
Don't be afraid. You'll be fine. You're strong, you're fast, and you're smart.
He is trying to convince himself, too. Why am I leaving him? It's such a long shot that Sharon is still human. But when I saw her face on the news, I was so sure. It was just a normal raid, one of a thousand. As usual, when we felt isolated enough, safe enough, we had the TV on as we cleaned out the pantry and fridge. Just to get the weather forecast. There isn't much entertainment in the dead, boring, everything-is-perfect reports that pass for news among the parasites. It was the hair that caught my eye. The flash of deep, almost pink-red that I'd only ever seen on one person. I can still see the look on her face as she peeked at the camera from the corner of one eye. The look that said, "I'm trying to be invisible, don't see me." She walked not quite slowly enough, worked too hard at keeping a casual pace, trying desperately to blend in. No body snatcher would feel that need. What is Sharon doing, walking around human in a huge city like Chicago? Are there others? Trying to find her doesn't even seem like a choice, really. If there is a chance there are more humans out there, we have to locate them. And I have to go alone. Sharon will run from anyone but me. Well, she will run from me, too, but maybe she will pause long enough for me to explain. I am sure I know her secret place.
"And you?" I ask him in a thick voice. I'm not sure I can physically bear this looming goodbye.
"Will you be safe?"
"Neither heaven nor hell can keep me apart from you, Melanie."
Without giving me a chance to catch my breath or wipe away the fresh tears, she threw another at me. Jamie curls up under my arm. He doesn't fit the way he used to. He has to fold in on himself, his long, gangly limbs poking out in sharp angles. His arms are starting to turn hard and sinewy, but in this moment he's a child, shaking, cowering almost. Jared is loading the car. Jamie would not show this fear if he were here. Jamie wants to be brave, to be like Jared.
"I'm scared," he whispers.
I kiss his night-dark hair. Even here among the sharp, resinous trees, it smells like dust and sun. It feels like he is part of me, that to separate us will tear the skin where we are joined. "You'll be fine with Jared." I have to sound brave, whether I feel that way or not.
"I know that. I'm scared for you. I'm scared you won't come back, like Dad."
I flinch. When Dad didn't come back, though his body did eventually, trying to lead the Seekers to us, it was the most horror and the most fear and the most pain I'd ever felt. What if I do that to Jamie again?
"I'll come back.
I always come back."
"I'm scared," he says again.
I have to be brave. "I promise everything will be fine. I'm coming back. I promise. You know I won't break a promise, Jamie. Not to you." The shaking slows. He believes me. He trusts me. And another. I can hear them on the floor below. They will find me in minutes or seconds. I scrawl the words on a dirty shred of newsprint. They are nearly illegible, but if he finds them, he will understand. "Not fast enough. Love you. Love Jamie. Don't go home." Not only do I break their hearts, I steal their refuge, too. I picture our little canyon home abandoned, as it must be forever now. Or if not abandoned, a tomb. I see my body leading the Seekers to it, my face smiling as we catch them there.
"Enough," I said out loud, cringing away from the whiplash of pain. "Enough. You've made your point. I can't live without them either now. Does that make you happy? Because it doesn't leave me many choices, does it? Just one. To get rid of you. Do you want the Seeker inside you? Ugh!"
I recoiled from the thought as if I would be the one to house her. "There is another choice," Melanie thought softly.
Really? I demanded with heavy sarcasm.
Show me one.
Look and see.
I was still staring at the mountain peak. It dominated the landscape, a sudden upthrust of rock surrounded by flat scrubland. Her interest pulled my eyes over the outline, tracing the uneven, two-pronged crest. A slow, rough curve, then a sharp turn north, another sudden turn back the other way, twisting back to the north for a longer stretch, and then the abrupt southern decline that flattened out into another shallow curve. Not north and south, the way I'd always seen the lines in her piecemeal memories. It was up and down. The profile of a mountain peak. The lines that led to Jared and Jamie. This was the first line, the starting point. I could find them.
We could find them, she corrected me.
You don't know all the directions. Just like with the cabin, I never gave you everything.
I don't understand.
Where does it lead? How does a mountain lead us?
My pulse beat faster as I thought of it.
Jared was close.
Jamie within my reach. She showed me the answer.
They're just lines. And Uncle Jeb is just an old lunatic. A nut job, like the rest of my dad's family.
I try to tug the book out of Jared's hands, but he barely seems to notice my effort.
A nut job? Like Sharon's mom?
He counters, still studying the dark pencil marks that deface the back cover of the old photo album. It's the one thing I haven't lost in all the running. Even the graffiti loony Uncle Jeb left on it during his last visit has sentimental value now.
Point taken.
If Sharon is still alive, it will be because her mother, loony Aunt Maggie, could give loony Uncle Jeb a run for the title of craziest of the crazy Strider siblings. My father had been only slightly touched by the Strider madness. He didn't have a secret bunker in the backyard or anything. The rest of them, his sister and brothers, Aunt Maggie, Uncle Jeb, and Uncle Guy, were the most devoted of conspiracy theorists. Uncle Guy had died before the others disappeared during the invasion, in a car accident so commonplace that even Maggie and Jeb had struggled to make an intrigue out of it. My father always affectionately referred to them as the Crazies.
"I think it's time we visited the Crazies," Dad would announce.
And then Mom would groan. Which is why such announcements had happened so seldom. On one of those rare visits to Chicago, Sharon had snuck me into her mother's hidey-hole. We got caught. The woman had booby traps everywhere. Sharon was scolded soundly, and though I was sworn to secrecy, I'd had a sense Aunt Maggie might build a new sanctuary. But I remember where the first is. I picture Sharon there now, living the life of Anne Frank in the middle of an enemy city. We have to find her and bring her home. Jared interrupts my reminiscing.
Nut jobs are exactly the kind of people who will have survived. People who saw Big Brother when he wasn't there. People who suspected the rest of humanity before the rest of humanity turned dangerous. People with hiding places ready.
Jared grins, still studying the lines. And then his voice is heavier.
People like my father. If he and my brothers had hidden rather than fought, well, they'd still be here.
My tone is softer, hearing the pain in his. Okay, I agree with the theory, but these lines don't mean anything.
Tell me again what he said when he drew them.
I sigh. They were arguing, Uncle Jeb and my dad. Uncle Jeb was trying to convince him that something was wrong, telling him not to trust anyone. Dad laughed it off. Jeb grabbed the photo album from the end table and started almost carving the lines into the back cover with a pencil. Dad got mad, said my mom would be angry. Jeb said,
"Linda's mom asked you all to come up for a visit, right? Kind of strange, out of the blue. Got a little upset when only Linda would come.
Tell you the truth, Trev, I don't think Linda will be minding anything much when she gets back. Oh, she might act like it, but you'll be able to tell the difference.
It didn't make sense at the time, but what he said really upset my dad. He ordered Uncle Jeb out of the house. Jeb wouldn't leave at first. Kept warning us not to wait until it was too late. He grabbed my shoulder and pulled me into his side.
"Don't let him get you, honey," he whispered. "Follow the lines. Start at the beginning and follow the lines. Uncle Jeb will keep a safe place for you."
That's when Dad shoved him out the door.
Jared nods absently, still studying. The beginning, the beginning. It has to mean something.
Does it? They're just squiggles, Jared. It's not like a map. They don't even connect.
There's something about the first one, though. Something familiar. I could swear I've seen